Hey, it's you, man, from KC95 here. Good evening and welcome to Toasted Tavern. Your host, Scott Tobin, and the man called Wags are ready to bring you the night in sports. So pull up a stool, grab a drink, and let's get toasted.
And welcome into the Toasted Tavern. Yes, we're going to try this again because we had some technical difficulties last night. And I know you didn't want to see me talking for an hour. So we were back tonight to talk all manner of sports. We got so much to go. And it is the wonderful time of the year for sports fans. We talked last night about everything going on. And, you know, Scott, how are you doing now? It's been one day.
I'm doing all right now, man. Knock on wood, I won't be sitting in the dark in like 15 minutes like last night. Mid-sentence and everything just went black on me. But hopefully we can get through the show, man, because like you said, there is a lot to talk about. And if you're a sports fan, this is a great time because, I mean, every single sport, even the sports that are in their offseason, have a ton of stuff going on right now.
Yeah, the NFL is dominating the headlines day in and day out, and it's not even their season. This is their offseason. We haven't even hit the NFL draft yet, and the NFL is just absolutely dominating the headlines. But we're not going to let that happen here. We're not going to start with the NFL because we don't have a team. Yes, we're still bitter about that. The teams that we do have are in action, and we were talking about the Blues a little bit last night. We'll get to them in just a little bit because we talked about the trade deadline yesterday. They had a great game against Washington last night. We'll get into that in a little bit. But let's start off with the Cardinals because there's still a little consternation around this team because other teams have kind of made moves to shore up their offense and their pitching staffs, and the Cardinals are having to deal with some injuries and some other things that, you know, fans are a little bit nervous about what's going on with this team. But so far, they're doing okay. I mean, they lost their first game of the spring today, a 10-3 loss to the Astros against Justin Verlander. Adam Wainwright pitched today, gave up 3 runs. But overall, this team has come out pretty decent at the beginning of spring and doing it with the guys that aren't necessarily going to be a part of the lineup per se. I mean, Nolan Arenado, Goldschmidt, these guys have done well as well, but it's been some of the younger guys that we're getting looks at that have produced right now. But, you know, talk to us a little bit about what the Cardinals have done so far free agency wise that has kind of got you excited despite the fact that none of the big names came here.
I don't know that they've done anything free agency wise that I would say got me excited. I do like, and I will say, Steven Matz is going to be a good pickup. You know, he's not a guy that you're like, oh my God, we got Steven Matz, but he's going to be a solid Cardinal. He's going to be that 3 or 4 guy. He's going to win probably 12 to 15 games. He's going to have probably a mid threes ERA. He's not going to strike out a lot of guys, but he's going to eat innings. And I think that's going to be a good pickup, but it's not a pickup that you're like, oh my God, I can't wait for the season to start because I can't wait to see Steven Matz pitch. You know, the same thing with Corey Dickerson last week. You know, a lot of people I know were hoping they were going to go get Kyle Schwarber or whatever, but when you see the years and the money that Schwarber got, it really didn't make sense for the Cardinals to do that when you've got Gorman and you've got Jordan Walker and you've got all these kids coming that are going to be here in the next couple of years. You know, it just didn't make a whole lot of sense to go out and throw a 6-year deal at a guy like Kyle Schwarber to be your DH. I think Corey Dickerson is going to be a really nice piece to this team. I mean, when you look at his numbers over the last few years, I mean, he's really basically what he is a more consistent Jock Peterson. He's a guy who's going to hit. He's going to get on base. He's going to draw walks. You know, he's got a 275, 278 career batting average somewhere in there. So he's going to hit a little bit. He's got power. He's hit over 24 home runs 4 different times. So he's going to hit some home runs. He's won a couple of gold gloves in the past. So he's not going to kill you defensively. You know, and he's going to play mainly against right-handed pitching. His splits are pretty bad. He's not going to play a whole lot against left-handed pitching. So you're still going to have to figure out who your DH is on the days that there's a lefty pitching. But he is going to help against right-handed pitching. He's going to be that left-handed power bat that you were looking for in that spot. You know, those are the two big ones. And then, you know, I know everybody's going to say, man, then they dumpster dive because you got Drew Verhagen and Nick Wicken and those guys. But they've pitched really well when you look at what they've done so far this spring, you know. And, you know, I feel like they're going to be – I think they're going to be solid pieces. You know, I mean, again, they're not sexy. They're not people that you're going to get excited about. But I think they're going to be solid pieces for this team to help you stay in the hunt. And I don't know why I have this feeling. I still think there may be a move or two that happens. And I'm going to piggyback off of some things that some people on other radio stations in St. Louis were talking about today. You know, if you saw the comments that Ollie Marmol has made the last couple of days, I don't think Juan Yepes is going to make this opening day roster. You know, he's not looked good in spring training. If you've watched him try to play defense or run the bases, it's pretty ugly. And he hasn't hit very well so far. I mean, I know it's only been five games, but he just doesn't look comfortable at the plate right now. It sounds like from everything they're talking about, the kid that has done really well is Brendan Donovan. And it sounds like Donovan's going to make the team. You know, he's a left-handed hitter. He's kind of, imagine a more powerful Tommy Edman, and that's kind of what this kid is. I mean, he's not built like Edman. I mean, he's not going to steal bases, but he's that gritty, tough kid that can play all over the place. He can play third, he can play second, he can play short, he can play some outfield. And he's got more power. You know, he's a bigger kid than Edman is. And so I think he's going to play. He's hit a home run already this spring. He had a couple of hits again today. He's looked really, really good. And he gives you a lot of versatility defensively. What happens now when you start looking at this roster is, okay, so you got Corey Dickerson. You've got Donovan. You've got Lars Nootbaar. All of a sudden, you've got three left-handed hitters on this bench because you figure that, you know, you figure that the right-handers are going to be your backup catcher and your backup shortstop. And, you know, that's kind of where you're at right-handed right now, you know. And so what happens to a guy like Lars Nootbaar? Because Corey Dickerson, you figure, is going to get more at-bats than Nootbaar does. He can play defense. He's going to be your DH. So all of a sudden, you have all these left-handed bats, and if you're not going to bring Yepes up here, you don't have a right-handed power bat off your bench. So does that all of a sudden make, with Donovan and Dickerson, does that already all of a sudden make Yepes and Nootbaar possibly trade bait? There's a team in Oakland that's got a couple of starting pitchers that are looking for young players that are right on the verge of being major league ready. You know, Lars Nootbaar could be a really good piece for them as an outfielder. You know, he's hit really well this spring. You know, he could be a piece in the outfield. It looks like Juan Yepes is basically a DH, and that's going to be it. Just watching the way he's played, he just doesn't look comfortable doing anything else. And again, we go back to the fact that Ollie Marmol basically said yesterday that he's not sure they can trust him to be that backup first baseman, to be that backup third baseman. Just not sure he's ready for that at the major league level yet. So maybe those two guys move, and you go get a Sean Manaea, which is who I would want. You know, he's the one that's going to cost a little less to get because he's only got 1 year left on his deal. Plus, he's the more established of the two pitchers that Oakland has that they're trying to move. So maybe you make that move with those two guys. And probably just those two guys aren't going to do it. You're probably going to have to trade one of your young pitching prospects. I mean, not like a Libertor or a Thompson, but one of those little bit younger guys in that package to do that. But maybe you get maybe you do make that move and you get Manaea. Then all of a sudden you go, huh, okay, so we did that. We still don't have a right-handed bat on our bench. Who do we know? And who did the manager, I don't know if you saw this, but Ollie Marmol had a quote about he knows Albert, he likes Albert. You know, he'd love to have Albert, but that's a little bit above his pay grade. So when the manager starts making comments like that in the public, maybe you make a move like that, and all of a sudden, Albert Pujols is that bat, power bat, right-handed bat off your bench. And then all of a sudden, you've opened a door for Nolan Gorman later in the year because Yepes isn't blocking him. Nootbaar is not blocking him. You know, Corey Dickerson, he's on a one-year deal, so he's not really blocking Gorman when you get to that point when you think you're ready. So, I mean, it kind of makes sense that a move like that could be something the Cardinals look at. And maybe it doesn't happen before the season starts. Maybe you get into mid-April and Oakland hasn't moved one of those guys yet, and then you do it. Or, you know, in 3 weeks when you see where Jack Flaherty actually is, and if he's not going to be ready, you know, because I know everybody's talking about, oh, Flaherty's not that bad, but if he's not going to be ready to start pitching for 2 weeks, it's going to take him a month once he starts throwing again to ramp up to be able to start. So no matter what, I mean, you're looking at mid to late May before you see Jack Flaherty, more than likely June 1st before you really see Jack Flaherty, if everything goes okay. So that's just my conspiracy theory. I think the Cardinals may have another couple of moves sitting there before we get too deep into the season.
I don't think that's out of the question. You know, article out today in MLB Trade Rumors is that, you know, the A's are focusing on finding a trade partner for Manaea first over Montas. So they're focusing on moving him before anything else. So it makes sense that this might be the direction the Cardinals are going, because like you said, you don't know when Jack's coming back. If everything goes well, Alex Reyes is going to be out for a significant amount of time, at least the next 2 months. And then you basically have Matz, Wainwright, Michaelis, who's looked halfway decent to start off the spring. And then kind of just a conglomeration of other players. I mean, Dakota Hudson has started pitching and he's been looking pretty good as well. So you've got a rotation there. And this Cardinals team has depth at the pitching position per se. But if you're able to go out there and get a left-handed starter, and you know, we had a former colleague that basically was always talking about you have to have a lefty, you have to have a lefty. It's not that you have to have a lefty, but having a lefty in that rotation is a very nice thing to have. And if the Cardinals can do that and then have a couple more, because they've got a couple other guys that throw left-handed, obviously, in this rotation. Now, all of a sudden, instead of having a right-handed dominant rotation, you're able to kind of alternate between righty and lefty. And that really throws a team off when they're trying to do a lineup and keep guys in consistent form, because now you're switching in, you know, righties for lefties, lefties for righties on an alternating basis. It really messes things up for the other team, which is something the Cardinals really need to do to start off this season.
Yeah, they really do. They really do. And, you know, going back to their rotation, you know, those other four guys that they have in the rotation that you kind of pencil in, if they're healthy, if you have Dakota Hudson, Michaelis, Wainwright, and Matz, that's a pretty good force. That's a pretty good foursome right there. You know, I think Dakota's going to be really good this year. I think he's going to be healthy, and he's going to be kind of the leader of that rotation. But if they could get, you know, especially like we said, if Jack is going to be out longer than they think, you know, then I think Minaya is definitely somewhere that you could pivot to and possibly make that move. The caveat to that is going to be, how does Matthew Liberatore look over the next couple of weeks? He's pitched pretty well his first two outings. You know, is he ready? I'm not sure, and I don't think you want to rush him. So I would be a little bit hesitant to do that. You know, Jake Woodford's looked okay so far, you know, and he pitched well. But again, you know, if you can find a way to get that lefty and a really solid starter to put into that rotation and kind of take the pressure off of those other guys, I think that would be a huge move.
It really would. It really would. And going back to your Albert addition as well, it's something that the rumor mill has kind of started to get back going again. It was quiet there for a little while, but now it's starting to kind of ramp back up again. And I don't think that move gets made until you make the move to bring in a starting pitcher. I mean, I think obviously you still need him as a right-handed bat in that dugout, whether or not you get the pitcher. But I feel like the Cardinals don't want to make that move until they have solidified that rotation. So I think the trade would happen before Albert getting signed, but I think it'd be one of those boom, boom. Like as soon as the trade's done, it's, hey, we made this trade. 12 hours later, we've signed Albert Pujols to a contract.
Yeah. I mean, I could definitely see it going that way, you know, or it could go the other way. You know, it could be a situation where they just decide, you know, Yepes isn't ready. We're going to send him down and we don't have enough of a right-handed presence on the bench. So we're just going to give Albert this deal and then hopefully move Yepes. That makes it more able to do it because you've gotten Albert. So I think those two moves could go hand in hand. Which one comes first? We'll see. But I think you're right. I think one of those two things will happen, and then the other one could happen almost immediately.
Yeah, I agree. And the one other piece that'll help with that is the fact that Yadier Molina's in camp now. He came back on Monday. Was a little late to camp due to some personal stuff, but he is back. And I don't know if you saw this, but apparently the last couple of days there's been a guy roaming spring training camp, and he's been taking measurements and meeting with a bunch of players and now coaches. Apparently Yadi is footing the bill for everyone to get suits on this team. And holy cow, if that doesn't endear you to your team and also makes you look pretty damn good, there's nothing else like it. Yadi is buying suits for the entire team.
Yeah, I heard that today. And, you know, those aren't off the rack suits. He's going all out. So yeah, that's just another example of what a good person and what a good teammate Yadi is, and why another reason why everybody loves him in that organization.
That is very true. All right, let's slide over and talk a little bit about this shortstop position. Obviously, the Cardinals did not make the move. They did not go out and get Trevor Story. He signed with Boston. Carlos Correa went up to Minnesota. A lot of the other guys have kind of moved around. So they're going to be going with Paul DeJong and Edmundo Sosa as kind of a platoon system. It looks like DeJong is probably going to start off as the main guy. And you look at it and you go, okay, man, we have waited year after year after year for this guy to really break back out to where he was that year he was in the All-Star game. He's looked okay to start off. He's been making some solid contact, hard contact. He's only struck out once in the first three games that he played. I don't have the statistics for today in front of me. It looks like he walked today and also had another at-bat that he did not get a hit in, but he did not strike out. So just one strikeout through the four games that he's played in. He's also made very, very good contact. Coming into today's game, three of his last four contacts were out or exited out at over 100 miles an hour. That's from Blake Newberry on Twitter. So it looks like DeJong is maybe in form like we need him to be, and he did put in a lot of work this offseason. Are we at a point now where we sit there and go, it is a game-by-game basis for him, where you look at it and you go, okay, if he has a good game, keep rolling. If he has a bad game, you got to get the quick hook. Or are we still in that mode of let's give him some more time and see what we have? Because we've done that for the last 3 years and haven't really seen anything consistent. That being said, the last 3 years haven't been consistent in any way, shape, or form as well. So does he get a little leeway because of that?
Well, and you've got to look at that when you talk about the 3 years, though. You know, the first part of that year, you know, the first half of 19, he was an all-star. The second half was bad. 2020, he had COVID. That happened. Last year, he broke his wrist. So, you know, you have things happen that kind of altered the way the rest of those seasons went. So, and, you know, and actually you go back 2018, he broke his wrist that year too. He got hit by a pitch. So, you know, he's had injuries. He's had COVID. Things have happened out of his control that have kind of altered the way his numbers have looked. You know, I'm higher on Paul DeJong than a lot of people are. I know a lot of people are done with him and don't like him, and, you know, they wanted Mundo Sosa. You know, I think what we saw last year is about the best you're going to get out of a Mundo Sosa. And, I mean, John Mozeliak has basically said that. He said it again this week. What we saw offensively last year from Sosa is his high point. I don't think there's anything more in him than that. I don't think there's any better steps than that. I think that's the best you're going to see from him. So, I mean, when your general manager's saying that, that's not exactly a vote of confidence that, hey, we've seen the best out of this guy. So, yeah. You know, and Paulie, you know, I think at his best, he's a 30 home run guy, which we've seen him do. You know, he can play gold glove caliber defense. We've seen him do it. He's been an all-star. You know, and he's still only 28 years old. It's not like he's 35 and washed up. You know, he's not Matt Carpenter. I think, you know, he's still making hard contact. Like you said, I think the ball he hit yesterday, he hit one that was like 109 off the bat. So I think he's going to bounce back, and I think they're going to give him a long leash. I think he's going to get – it's not going to be like, oh, he had two bad weeks, so now Sosa's playing. I think he's going to probably get till June or July to see – before you really see a whole lot of Edmundo Sosa play. I mean, he's going to play some. You know, DeJong will get days off, but I think it's going to be half of the season before you really see a switch where Sosa – would get more playing time. And if Sosa struggles, you do have Brendan Donovan, and, you know, who can play shortstop and, like I said, has a little bit more pop, is a little bit more offensively minded. And that was something else I was thinking about. If DeJong does well and Donovan does well, would a guy like Sosa be somebody that Oakland might be interested in a trade as well? A young guy that could play shortstop, could play some positions, would be relatively cheap in a trade for one of those pitchers and a package. So, I mean, the Cardinals have some options. I think, like I said, I think Paulie's going to get a pretty long leash. Sosa will get some playing time. I think Donovan's going to get mixed in. I think you're going to see guys moving all over the place with this team. I think other than the fact that Goldie and Arenado are at first and third every day, I think everything else, I think you're going to see people get moved. I mean, Marble's kind of talked about that. You know, they're going to play matchups. They're going to move guys around. You may see Tommy Edman in the outfield. You may see him at shortstop. You may see him at second. You may see him in the outfield. You know, I think you're going to see those guys move around, and I think you're going to see some different things from this team this year.
I like that. You know, throwing out different looks and playing the matchups. I mean, obviously that's kind of the reason Mike Schilt's not here anymore, is because he didn't want to essentially play along with the analytics side of things for the most part. So having a guy that will kind of play into that and see what's possible. I don't expect anything less. And, you know, one of those guys that could be moved around a lot or be in and out of the lineup is a guy, one of the only guys that did not settle at arbitration yesterday, which was Tyler O'Neill, somebody that I think was actually I think we're all a little surprised he hasn't gotten that extended contract after the last couple of years. I mean, back-to-back Gold Gloves. I mean, he finally put together a consistent season. So don't get me wrong. It's not like he's been doing this offensively for the last 3 or 4 years. But I feel like he may have earned a little bit more security. But you can't blame the Cardinals because he is arbitration eligible. So the longer you can get a guy cheaper, if you're still not sold on him or he hasn't been as consistent, you gotta run with it. So don't get me wrong there. But you know, he's one of the only ones that has not agreed on arbitration. They're still trying to figure out the numbers. Jack Flaherty actually agreed with the Cardinals. They settled on $5 million, which, once again, if he's healthy and goes out there and pitches the way Jack Flaherty can pitch, that's an absolute steal. I want to get to Flaherty here in a second because I was a little surprised that they agreed on a monetary value. But talk to me a little bit about Tyler O'Neill and where you see this playing out. Does he put together another good enough season to earn that extended contract?
Yeah, I think so. I think the Cardinals want to see him do it 2 years in a row. You know, like you said, he won the Gold Glove last year. But, you know, we didn't – 2 years ago, he started to look a little bit better at the plate, but we didn't see the consistency we saw this year. I think if he has another good year this year – and Tyler talked about wanting to sign a long-term deal with the Cardinals that he'd like to stay in St. Louis. So I think that if we see the consistency, I think you will see him get some kind of long-term deal, buy out the rest of his arbitration first couple of years of free agency. I think, and honestly, I think that's going to happen with him and Bader both. If they both have solid years, I think you'll see them both get extensions next offseason.
It's hard to imagine that Harrison Bader is still arbitration eligible. But then again, that's the way MLB has worked for so long. One of the things they were fighting for in that CBA that didn't really get hashed out. So, it's going to be something that you'll definitely be seeing next year if both these guys continue to have consistent years. Because Harrison has also been somebody that the last year or so, his offense has improved. You know, he's not necessarily chasing those down and away sliders. He's really shortened the swing. He's gotten better looks. And that defense hasn't gone away. And he is going to be another Gold Glove candidate this year. And once again, this is the thing that I think gets lost on the Cardinals is the fact that you very well possibly could have a Gold Glove player at every single position. Paul Goldschmidt's a Gold Glove winner. Arenado's a Gold Glove winner. You have O'Neill, Bader, Dylan Carlson all have the ability and if not won a Gold Glove. Tommy Edman, Gold Glove. Shortstop, Paul DeJong can play like that. And then you got Yadi behind the plate. I mean, the only position you don't really have a surefire Gold Glover is at the pitching spot. But Steven Matz is pretty good. Adam Wainwright's still pretty spry for a 40-year-old. So that's the thing that gets lost. This team has such good defense.
Yeah, they really do. I mean, that's going to be the key. You know, that's why you've seen them go get the pitchers that they have, not the strikeout guys, the guys that are going to pitch to contact, because you've got to take advantage of this amazing defense that you have. And like you said, they were the first team to win 5 Gold Gloves last year. They may be the first team. They could very well be the first team to win 6 or 7 next year with the team they've got.
Unbelievable. Unbelievable. All right, jump back to Flaherty real quick. Were you surprised that they settled on $5 million this year, especially after kind of the fight the last year or so for his value? Does the injury play into that for him, getting the security of making sure he has money if the injury goes sideways, or is this something different?
I'm sure that's probably most of it. Because you just don't know what – I mean, honestly, nobody can guarantee you what's going to happen with Jack Flaherty this year. So I'm sure that was a big part of it was, hey, let's take this $5 million. Let's not fight about it. Let's not have bad PR when PR for us and our camp is not great if you're Flaherty at this point. You know, he's alienated a lot of people in St. Louis. A lot of fans are not Jack Flaherty fans necessarily right now. So I think it's a good PR move on his point just to say, okay, let's do the $5 million. I'll bet on myself. And then next year – you know, I'll pitch well enough at some point this year that I get a big raise next year. And then, you know, when I hit free agency, I'll really be able to cash in. So I think that's what it is as much as anything.
That's what I was thinking as well. I mean, get the money while you can. Don't aggravate more people by trying to fight for more, especially after missing some time last year as well. So totally understand that. And it's going to be really interesting to see what happens with Flaherty because even before – everything kind of came out with the injury. There's a lot of people out there that believed, you know, once he hits free agency, he's Bolton. He's gone. He's LA through and through. He's going to be pitching for the Dodgers or maybe even the Angels if that is something that happens when he hits free agency. So they're like, you know, trade him while he's got the value. Trade him and get something for him. I don't necessarily sit there and think that he's going to just automatically bolt to LA. Now, LA does have the financial capabilities of paying a huge sum for a guy like Flaherty. But you, once again, you pretty much said it right there, is he's going to have to bet on himself a little bit. And if he continues to struggle, LA may not even want to look at him. So he's got to take his time here in St. Louis and really try to build that profile. And maybe when that time comes, the fact that the Cardinals have shown the loyalty, have continued to bump his pay up every single year, regardless of injury history, maybe that's something that plays into it as well. And hopefully he sees that and he pitches well enough that the Cardinals and him both go, hey, this is where I want to be at. Let's get it done and go forward.
Yeah, it's going to be really interesting to see what happens. Even if he does pitch well, with that slap tear in his shoulder, that at any point in time that thing could tear and his career could be over, I don't know that any team is going to give him the kind of money in the long-term contract that he thinks he deserves or wants. I just don't know that anybody does. I don't know that it makes sense to do it, because when you've already got that tear in your shoulder, you've already had the inflammation and stuff a couple of times now. I mean, you know, you just never know. Any pitch could be the last pitch that he makes. So is any team going to give him a $100 million 6 or 7 year contract? I wouldn't. I definitely wouldn't do it if I'm the Cardinals.
Not unless you can find, put into the contract, if this happens, you don't have to pay it, but that's something you don't really want to get into. So with that being said, I mean, I don't know enough about the injury to be confident in this, but is there a surgery that could be done to kind of fix that and prevent that? Because if that's the case, why do you not, now that you're guaranteed $5 million this year, why would you not maybe even consider going in there, getting it fixed, so that you know in back of your mind, peace of mind, that it, the next pitch may not be your last pitch?
Because the shoulder, the shoulder is so different than the elbow. I mean, the Tommy John, those kind of things, pitchers bounce back from. Shoulder surgeries, no matter what they are, the chances of a pitcher bouncing back just are not good. It doesn't happen. I mean, we all remember Mark Mulder, how amazing Mark Mulder was. And then he had that injury in the shoulder and he was never, ever the same guy again. And there's lots of pitchers that have had that. And so, you just hope and pray that you don't have to have that shoulder surgery, because if you do, there's just no guarantee. There's no timetable, basically, and there's no guarantees. Alan Bennis, another perfect example, a guy who should have been a stud. I mean, he should have been better than Andy, honestly. As good as Andy was, Alan was probably going to be better. But, he had basically this injury, and then it tore worse, and then, all the shoulder surgeries that he had couldn't fix it. It's just something that shoulders are just, for whatever reason, they can't figure them out like they can the elbow for a pitcher.
Wow. Well, yeah, we'll have to keep an eye on that as the season goes on and the next couple seasons, really. So, all right, let's move on to the Blues real quick, because they were in Washington last night trying to get back on track when it comes to winning games. They have not had a good March. 2-4-3 going into last night's game against the Capitals. They had dropped down to fourth place in the Central Division after being in the second place spot for a good couple of weeks. They put together a great effort last night, though. A 5-2 victory. David Perron extended his goal scoring streak to 7 games, ties a team record, which was set by Mike Sillinger back in 05-06. The Blues did it without Vladimir Tarasenko and Robert Thomas. Both of them were out. Tarasenko illness. Robert Thomas is dealing with an injury. They did that with a brand new player in Nick Leddy. They lost Torrey Krug in the middle of that game as well. They did all of that, and they were able to hold Washington to just 2 goals, neither of which were scored by Alexander Ovechkin. They kept Ovechkin in check last night. And really, they did it from the start. They got on their horse. They drove into the net. They kept the puck moving towards the capital zone. It was a clinical game for the Blues last night. And it makes you sit there and go, man, where has this team been all year? And then you sit back and you go, we ask the same fucking question every single year with this team. They go through a stretch where you go, what is going on? And then they play lights out and you go, where's this team been at? And then they go on a run. So the big question coming out of this, and after the trade deadline and where they sit right now, what other teams have done, is this a team that can go on a playoff run and maybe make another run at a cup this year?
You would like to think so. You would like to think that move to shore up your defense really fixed the one thing you were kind of lacking. It gave you that top pairing, the guy to play with Colton Parayko, and kind of solidify your defense. And, with the offense we've seen from this team, their forwards, they should be able to score plenty of goals as you move into the playoffs. You hope your goaltending tandem can figure it out and one of the two of them can get really hot again. If not, both of them play really well. I guess the biggest question really coming out of that game last night is Torrey Krug okay? And if not, how long is Torrey Krug going to be out?
It really is. It looks like he took a slash off the wrist last night. He exited the ice after playing with one hand for a good 25, 30 seconds. Went straight down the tunnel. No one's really heard anything yet as far as what the injury may be. They were supposed to get a bit of an update later tonight. Have not seen it yet. We'll kind of keep our eyes peeled on, you know, the social medias and all that just to see, you know, if we get anything as far as an injury update to Torrey Krug. And that would be a huge loss because him and Justin Falk and that second pairing have been lights out. I mean, they score goals and they prevent teams from scoring. It's when you watch a Blues game, you're not talking about, you hear when defensive breakdowns happen, it's the top defensive pairing of Parayko and Scandella. There's the breakdown. Or you're talking about that third pairing down there that's going up against a mismatch on a top line and they get, but you never hear much about what happens when Justin Falk and Torrey Krug are out on the ice because they played well together. They gel. They played on the Olympic team together. I mean, they know how to play with each other and they produce this year. So if you're going to lose him, that moves a guy like a Scandella up from the third pairing to the second pairing, which we saw how he struggled in the first matchup with Parayko. He's, you know, he might be a second pairing defenseman and he might play well with Justin Falk, but I would be much happier with him on that third pairing with Robert Bortuzzo. Does that mean that Nico Mikkola moves up? Maybe. He's been okay this year. Definitely not a top pairing defender at this point. But he might be able to fit in there and learn something by playing with Justin Falk. So we'll kind of have to see how that happens based on the injury potential to Torrey Krug. We'll see what happens. I mean, they got a game against Philadelphia tomorrow night at home. They start a 3-game home stretch tomorrow. So it's going to be real interesting to see how this team looks coming into tomorrow's game. Is Tarasenko back from illness? Is Thomas back? Because this team is a different team when Robert Thomas plays this year. And you don't want to sit there and say one guy makes a huge difference, but we've seen it with this team. You know, when the Jaden Schwartz was here, when he was out of the lineup, it was a different team. With Robert Thomas being out of the lineup, it's a bit of a different team. But nowadays, they've actually got a lot more around them that they can produce. I mean, Pavel Buchnevich has been a little quiet the last couple of weeks. I think he's been dealing with some stuff. He took a huge hit in the game last night and kind of got shooken up. But he's a guy that can go out there. Obviously, Tarasenko has played well. Jordan Kyrou's kind of been streaky as of late, still playing a decent game, but hasn't scored a whole lot as of late. You got an Alexei Toropchenko, who got his first goal against Columbus on Saturday night. He's been playing a very, very strong two-way game. He had a play last night where he lost the puck in the offensive zone, hard back check, and ended up creating an offsides for Washington. So they have a lot of other guys that can slot in, but when Robert Thomas is in the lineup, there's just some sort of electricity on that line, and it permeates throughout the entire team.
Yeah, it really does. You know, he really sets things up and makes things work for that offense. And it's funny, you named all those people that score and that are important, and you don't mention a guy like David Perron, and you didn't mention the captain. You know, he's been kind of quiet this year offensively. So it's just funny. It just shows you how much scoring depth they do have when you don't have to count on those guys. And when they're not doing a whole lot, you're not like, oh, man, if they don't do something, the whole team struggles. You know, it just, again, shows the depth that this team now has at the forward position.
And when your captain's not, I mean, Ryan O'Reilly is on the top line. Don't get me wrong. He is the top line center. But he's not a top line player. And that's kind of been the MO for Blues captains the last couple of go-arounds is, you know, outside of Pietrangelo, they've been kind of that second, third line kind of guy, grinder, gritty, doing what they can to help his team win. And that's exactly what Ryan O'Reilly does. He's not going to go out there and score a ton of goals. He's going to assist on a lot. He's going to make a lot of plays, but he's going to be the guy that gets in there and into the dirty areas. And you're seeing that kind of rub off on some of the younger players, like a Toropchenko. And that goal he scored in Columbus was exactly what you wanted a big body guy to do. He went to the front of the net, got a greasy goal. He's a bigger, better Patrick Berglund because he actually goes to the front of the net. And I've been on this kid since rookie camp his first year. I thought he was going to be a stud. And I'm happy to say I think he very well could be. And the Blues are going to be really, really lucky to have him and a Jake Neighbors coming up as well. I mean, sitting here thinking about a Jake Neighbors, Alexei Toropchenko pairing on one of those lines, I get all giddy inside and go, man, I want this team to win now, but I cannot wait to see them in the next 4 or 5 years.
Yeah. Do you think that'll happen, or do you think one of those guys could be involved when the Matthew Tkachuk trade comes along?
As much as I'd love to see one of the Tkachuks here, I don't think it's actually going to happen. I just think Calgary would be foolish to let him go.
I think you might be the only person in St. Louis media that doesn't think it's going to happen.
I mean, it'd be nice. It really would. I mean, it'd be a homecoming for sure, and I think he fits well with this team. He's a Craig Berube type of player, but the one thing going for that kind of deal is the fact that the Blues and Flames have a great history of trades. I mean, you had the Brett Hull trade, you had the Al MacInnis trade. Those trades have actually worked out both ways for both teams. So just to say that it may never happen is probably a farce. It very well could happen, and it might happen. But I just, you know, Doug Armstrong has been so good and so disciplined. And that we saw that at this trade deadline. You know, he did not budge when it came to giving up some of these guys for, you know, a Chychrun or Hampus Lindholm. And granted, defenseman is different than a forward. It's way different, and the fan support and everything that would go along with it. But you also have to look at it, too, that Matthew Tkachuk could get traded here and be absolutely horrible because of the pressure that would be put on him playing in his hometown with his dad's name overshadowing him. I don't think it would happen, but that is a lot of pressure to put on a guy. We've seen it happen more than once when a guy has gone home.
Yeah, no, it absolutely has. I do think he is going to end up playing here, whether it happens in a trade or when he becomes a free agent. I just think it's more likely that he gets traded here because I think he's going to tell Calgary that he's not going to re-sign there. And so I think they're going to trade him because I think they'd rather trade him and get something for him than have him walk.
Oh, yeah. I mean, if you've got the ability to get something for Matthew Tkachuk, you'd be foolish not to try and get a trade worked out because you're going to be able to recoup the cupboard, essentially. And if it is with the Blues and you do pull a Jake Neighbors or a Toropchenko away from this team, you know, that's what you're going to have to do, and it's what you want to do. I look at it and I go, once again, Armstrong has been very, very disciplined. And you look at the trades that he's made for Ryan O'Reilly, for Pavel Buchnevich. I mean, these guys that he's brought in, even Braden Schenn, going back to that, he's done a really good job of offloading bad contracts. Yes, he's had to supplement it with first-round picks, but because those first-round picks are going to be later in the draft, because the team plays well and is in the playoffs and goes on deep playoff runs, I think if you look at it, he might be able to find a way to get that done with Calgary, too, where he doesn't have to give up one of those big-name prospects. I mean, the biggest-name prospect that he's made given away in any of these trades has been Tage Thompson. And Tage Thompson's played well in Buffalo this year, and he very well could be very, very good. But that's the only real prospect the Blues have given up in any of those big trades. And I just, once again, don't see Armstrong either giving up that much for Tkachuk or even giving up anything for Tkachuk at that point.
Yeah, I don't know. Tkachuk's just different than any of those other guys because, I mean, as big as Braden Schenn was or Ryan O'Reilly, I mean, they're not Matthew Tkachuk. I mean, Tkachuk is a young superstar in this league who, like you said, with his name, with the heritage, with his dad playing here, I mean, that's a game changer for this organization as far as just bringing in more fans, bringing in more money, selling more merchandise. I mean, that's bringing in a superstar in his prime, which the Blues haven't really done. I mean, in a lot of ways, you could say bringing Matthew Tkachuk at that point in his career would probably the closest thing that you could say at that age being a superstar would be Brett Hull. And Brett Hull wasn't necessarily a superstar yet when the Blues made that trade, but you see where I'm going there.
Oh yeah, in no way am I comparing Matthew Tkachuk to Wayne Gretzky at all. But that would be that's the comparable move. You're bringing in a guy because I mean Gretzky wasn't even in his prime.
Well, that's the thing.
Gretzky came to St. Louis.
Yeah,
Gretzky but it was the name. Right. It was the name that came in because when Brett Hull was traded to St. Louis, he was a fat kid. No one knew what this kid was going to be able to do. Gretzky came in. It was the name. Tkachuk coming in would be like that. It would be this giant name and on top of that, you get him in the prime of his career. It would probably, I dare say it, if they pull off a trade for Matthew Tkachuk in the next 2 years, it would be the biggest trade in the entire history of the St. Louis Blues organization.
It might be. It really might be.
I mean, just with every intangible around it. Because we know what Brett Hull became. We know what Chris Pronger became. I mean, hell, we even know what Al MacInnis became. But none of those guys came in at a point where they were already established, they were still in their prime, and they were one of the best players in the league at that point in time. They all either became that or continued to maintain it, even getting into their older age. If Tkachuk were to come in, it would be a game changer for sure. And it would be hands down probably the best trade in Blues history, at least initially.
You know, I mean, in some ways, and again, it's different because Matthew Tkachuk is younger and he's more in his prime. But in some ways, you could almost compare it to the trade the Blues made for his dad. Because Keith was a big name. He was still one of the better players in the league. He was a big name. It was a big deal. So, I mean, yeah. In some ways, you could almost compare it to that trade.
Dang, that would be nuts if that ended up happening. Wow, yeah. Let's not get too excited. We still got a season to play. Trade deadline's already passed. That's going to be in the offseason. We'll see how that plays out. But Blues are at home tomorrow night against the Philadelphia Flyers. And on that note, we're going to talk about the NCAA tournament here in just a second. But one NCAA note that goes along with the Blues game tomorrow night is the fact that Lindenwood is going to announce that they're going NCAA Division I next year in ice hockey. Now, if you knew about the fact that Lindenwood as a whole was going Division I next year, this is just another piece of that puzzle. The hockey team going NCAA Division I next year. They won the ACHA National Championship last week, an 8-3 victory over Central Oklahoma. Finished the season 22-3. Their only three losses came to Division I NCAA schools. This has been a wildly successful program, and now they're making that jump to the NCAA Division I. It's going to be tough, but this is a very, very exciting time for local hockey here in St. Louis.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. It's an exciting time for Lindenwood, period. But, yeah, like you said, their hockey program has been very successful, and it's going to be exciting for them to make that jump and really start playing Division I competition all the time and see how they match up every night when they take on Division I schools.
Yeah, lots of fun there. So make sure you get out to see those games when they happen. All right, let's jump to the NFL because it has dominated the headlines. But go ahead.
No, real quick, I was just going to say, before we start talking NFL football, all of our friends on the western side of the state may want to turn the volume down. We know today's been a sad day for you guys, so if you want to tune out right now, we completely understand. Go ahead, Wag. Sorry, I just wanted to throw in that little –
No, you got to prepare them because that was – we thought yesterday there was a bunch of big news. We thought last week there was a bunch of big news. We thought the week before there was a bunch of big news. The NFL just continuously drops huge, huge nuggets of news almost on a daily basis. And you know, yesterday it was, you know, the fact that Matt Ryan was traded to the Colts, Marcus Mariota went to the Falcons. All of that happened. You had the trade last week. You have Deshaun Watson going to Cleveland. Before that, Russell Wilson to Denver. I mean, just so much stuff happened at the QB market. But once again, all of that blown up again today by the fact that the Chiefs traded Tyreek Hill to the Miami Dolphins today for 5 draft picks, 3 this year, 2 next year. Hill then signed a contract extension, 4 years, $120 million, makes him the highest paid wide receiver just 1 week after Davante Adams became the highest paid wide receiver. So, hey, guess what? Davante Adams, you got away from a diva and Aaron Rodgers, thought you were going to be headline news for a while. Well, Tyreek Hill just stole that away from you as well. $72.2 million guaranteed, $52.535 million at signing. I'll say this. I thought Tyreek actually had an off year last year. I thought he started to kind of decline. He had a career and franchise high 111 catches last year, just 1,239 yards and 9 touchdowns. And I think that's where I got a little bit off my game because he had a lot of catches, obviously 111, but it wasn't a ton of yardage and a ton of touchdowns. They spread the ball around a lot last year. So that was where my misconception of a down year for Tyreek Hill came along. But I'm a little surprised. I get that contract negotiations kind of broke down between the two sides. The Chiefs said, hey, Tyreek, go ahead and start looking for a trade if you can find one. See if a partner will approach us and see what they will offer. But I was surprised that this actually happened.
I was too. You know, again, this is something that everybody talked about a couple of years ago. Yeah, it's awesome. You signed Patrick Mahomes to this massive deal. But when you start signing your quarterbacks to $40 and $50 million deals, guess what? You can't keep the team around him. You guys start wanting more money, and you can't do it. And to lose Tyreek Hill, this isn't just a wide receiver. Devontae Adams, as good as he is not Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill is a game changer. Tyreek Hill is probably the most dynamic player in football because of that speed, because he can catch – every time he catches that 2 or 3 yard pass, he can go 95 yards like that. And now Kansas City doesn't have that. And, you know, you talked about them spreading the ball out and him not having the yardage last year. It's because teams were double covering him. You know, they were putting that deep safety. They were making him catch the ball short and then trying to run after the catch as opposed to being able to throw the ball deep. Well, now guess what happens? Because Travis Kelce's yards per catch were way down last year too, because they were making the Chiefs play in front of them, short passes, trying to run after the catch. Well, guess what? Now you've lost that deep threat. Now everybody's going to double Travis Kelce. Kansas City's offense is going to be bad next year. I'm sorry, because you've lost that game-changing threat. It's going to be tougher on Travis Kelce. It's going to be tougher on that offense. They went and got Juju Smith-Schuster. Yeah, he's would have been a good number two. He's proven in Pittsburgh the last couple of years he's not a number one. And now there's going to be so much pressure on him because now he's the guy who's replacing Tyreek Hill, kind of like he was the guy who was supposed to replace Antonio Brown, and that didn't go well in Pittsburgh. I don't know what Kansas City does because their defense has gotten worse. I mean, the whole dynamic of the AFC has changed in the last week. You look around and it's like, holy crap. Because, you know, I mean, you look at that conference now, and we'll talk about some of these trades and some more here in a second. But, I mean, you can literally now look around and go, there are 9 or 10 teams in the AFC that you can say, I can see how they could go to the Super Bowl. With the Colts getting Matt Ryan, I mean, I think that's huge for them. I think they're going to be tough. You look at Tyreek going to Miami now. With what Miami did the second half of the season and with the receivers they brought in last year in the draft, their offense is all of a sudden scary. Devontae with the Raiders. I mean, we'll talk about the Cleveland thing here in a minute, too. Buffalo, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Baltimore. We forget about Baltimore because, you know, they had so many injuries last year that their offense didn't run. I mean, everybody in the AFC, San Diego.
Put a dollar in the jar.
The Chargers, the Broncos. I mean, the AFC is going to be absolutely crazy. I will say, though, of all the moves that have happened, and we've seen more big trades, and trades don't happen in the NFL.
No.
I mean, you might see these kind of trades in a 20-year span. We've seen them happen in 2 weeks. But I will say, of all the big trades, if I was the one fan base, I would be worried that I'm not sure that the trade is going to work as well as we think it's going to. If I'm a Denver Broncos fan, I'm a little nervous.
Yeah, I mean, you talked about it when the deal was made. I mean, is Russell Wilson still the quarterback that he was early on in his time in Seattle? Will he have an offensive line that will protect him? Will he have the receivers and the offense around him to actually be successful? So, I mean, I think if the answer to those questions is yes, where he is the same quarterback he was early on in Seattle and all those other things are there, then yes, Denver can be a very, very dangerous team. They could be the second best team in that division. But that's the thing. You look at that division, you have no idea who the hell is the best team in that division. You've got Kansas City with Mahomes, now Tyreek Hillless. You've got Derek Carr with Devontae Adams, college teammates. You know, the camaraderie is there. The timing may still need to get reworked a little bit, but that is there. And the Raiders have kind of started to rise up a little bit. You've got Herbert over there in L.A. with the Chargers. He was kind of an underrated player last year. And, you know, they still – yeah, I look at the Chargers and I'm still not 100% sold on them as a whole. I still think they've had a lot of injuries that they've had to deal with. But overall, they're still a really good team. They won some games last year that they probably shouldn't have. They lost some games that they shouldn't have as well. But they were in every single game. And then you got Denver, who, if those questions are answered, also can be a very dangerous team. And just like you said, look at the AFC right now. Josh Allen, Mac Jones, Joe Burrow, Mitchell Trubisky, Deshaun Watson, Lamar Jackson, Ryan Tannehill, Matt Ryan, Patrick Mahomes, Carr, Herbert, Wilson. I mean, literally every team outside of about three or four have a legit chance of winning a playoff game. And then you look over at the NFC and you go, okay, you've got Rodgers and Brady and then Stafford. Wow. I mean, NFC is going to get dominated this year.
Yeah, and yeah, Aaron Rodgers. Who the hell is he throwing it to? Because all of his wide receivers are gone. Valdez-Scanlon's talking about signing in Kansas City. That's the next move. You know, St. Brown's gone. Adams, I mean, he has nobody to throw the ball to in Green Bay. You know, the Bucs have some issues with their wide receivers. Godwin's been hurt. Yep. Mike Evans has had issues. I know Brady's trying to recruit Julio Jones down there to come play with them. They did get Leonard Fournette re-signed. You know, Dallas has gotten worse. You know, Amari Cooper's gone. They've lost a couple of their offensive linemen. They've lost a couple of their defensive players. I mean, the NFC is going to be brutal. They might as well just pick two teams from the AFC and say, okay, you guys play the Super Bowl this year.
I'm going to put this out here right now. And I'm not – there's no confidence behind this in any way, shape, or form, because there's never been any confidence in this player or this team, really, in my mind. But after signing Za'Darius Smith, watch out for Minnesota this year. This might be the year that the Vikings actually make their move and either win the NFC North or get the wild card and go on a bit of a run. I would maybe seriously consider putting a little bit of money down on the Vikings this year. With everything that's going on in the NFC right now, they seem the most consistent team with what they got. They rebuilt the offensive line. They've rebuilt the defense. That might be the team in the NFC this year.
It could be. You ready for my crazy prediction?
Oh, well, I mean, you're a Cowboys fan, so anything is crazy, so.
No. Okay, here we go. This is a team that I don't particularly love. We see one more quarterback trade. He goes to Seattle. Baker Mayfield, with DK Metcalf and the rest of that receiving corps, leads the Seattle Seahawks to the NFC West Championship.
I could see that being the case, but here's the other thing. What happens if Jimmy G gets moved and San Francisco's sitting there and brings in Baker Mayfield? That might be another place that he could go. Not saying he'd be successful there like he would be in Seattle, because the receiving corps is a little different, but Jimmy G's going to get moved as well. So there's still a couple of dominoes out there that have yet to fall. I don't think Jimmy G's getting traded to Seattle, I can tell you that much. But if Baker does go to Seattle, that could be another spot. It's just that defense, though. I mean, the defense in Seattle has really taken a huge hit, and they're going to have to outscore opponents on a weekly basis. Now, with Baker there, they probably could, but that would be where I would be a little bit scared, is the fact that vaunted Seattle defense is no more.
Oh, no, it's not. I mean, all they've got left on defense is Jamal Adams, who's really wishing he wouldn't have made that trade request a couple of years ago. You know, and again, who knows? I throw that out there. It's possible that Baker doesn't get traded, because everything you hear, I know a lot of Cleveland fans are like, oh, nobody wants Baker, blah, 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 blah. Baker can't get traded. Well, there's two things. First of all, Baker just had surgery, so he hasn't been able to pass a physical. So Cleveland isn't trading him right now anyway, because you've got to make sure that he's healthy. The other thing, we don't know for sure that Deshaun Watson's going to be able to play this year. So, you know, Cleveland may hold on to Baker until you get Watson back. You may keep him this year and slowly try to bring Deshaun back, because he didn't play at all last year. He's probably going to miss at least 4 or 8 games. At the minimum, I think he gets suspended 4 games. I think it's more likely it's 8, and it could be the whole season. You know, we just really don't know yet. So it's possible Cleveland holds on to Baker. I don't know how that works if you do that. I think Baker would probably make life miserable for everybody, because, I mean, if I've never seen a quarterback be so disrespected by their fan base and by an organization, especially a guy who, you know, was a couple of plays away from getting you to the AFC Championship game last year, or well, 2 years ago now, and then went out there and gutted this year when he was hurt and had no business playing, but refused to stop trying to help his team win, and then just say, oh, yeah, no, we want a mature quarterback. You want a mature quarterback, so you went out and got the guy that has 22 women accusing him of sexual misconduct? I mean, of all the dumb statements to make and use that as a reason why you're replacing your quarterback, I mean, that's just an asinine statement to make and then bring in Deshaun Watson. And I'm a Deshaun Watson, talent-wise, I'm a fan. You know, I mean, I have questions about what happened like everybody else did. But to make a statement like that and replace Baker, saying you want a mature guy to be your leader, and then bring in a guy that's got the questions that Deshaun has right now, just, you know, you have to have questioned that whole organization in Cleveland right now.
You really do. And, you know, you look at Baker Mayfield, and I think he's actually become more mature in Cleveland. You know, he's become a family man in a sense. You know, he makes some pretty freaking funny commercials for sure. But, I mean, he's a hothead. Yes, he is. But so is Brett Favre. And, you know, he was pretty damn successful. And I think Baker has actually matured a lot in Cleveland. I think he's become a leader. I think he's been a guy that, like you said, shows that he will give everything that he has to his team no matter what. Yes, maybe he has not been great communicating with his teammates. Maybe he and OBJ have not had a good relationship. Maybe there is something there underlying on the underlying the surface there that maybe isn't a totally mature thing. But I think he's shown a lot in Cleveland. And if I were him, and he's already kind of admitted it, that he really does need to get out of there. And yeah. And he needs to go to an organization that will respect him and will treat him as a mature quarterback. And it's just not in Cleveland. And honestly, if I were Baker, and I know this probably isn't going to be the mature thing to do, but if Cleveland doesn't trade me and says, hey, we're going to hang on to you because Deshaun's going to get suspended for 8 games or what have you. If I'm Baker, I'm like, I'm out. I'm not going to play this year. I'm done. I'm not going to be the stool pigeon to hold the seat warm for the guy you traded to replace me and said was more mature than me. Yeah, it may not be a mature move on his part, but if I'm Baker, I'm sitting out. I'm not playing if they don't trade me and they say you're playing until Deshaun's ready.
Yeah, I mean, I agree with you. That's what I would do too, but all that does is hurt Baker's stock if you do that, and it hurts his reputation wherever he goes next. But, yeah, it's just a bad situation in Cleveland, and it's a shame that it fell apart as quickly as it did. And, you know, there's a reason why the Browns have been the factory of sadness in Cleveland. But, you know, again, I feel bad for Browns fans. You know, I'm a Browns fan. I like the Browns. My buddy that lives in Baltimore is a diehard Browns fan. You know, his family is from that area. He's a huge, huge Browns fan. And he's literally conflicted. You know, he's excited that Deshaun's coming there because of the talent. But it's like, man, at the same time, how do you get excited about a guy that has all of this hanging over his head right now? And I know that, you know, there's no criminal charges. You know, and we don't know what happened. And we're never going to know really what happened because this is going to get settled. And it's never, ever going to go to court. You know, even a civil court, it's going to get settled out of court. There's never going to be any type of court proceeding to this. No. You know, there's a lot of questions. It's weird how 22 women all end up with the same lawyer and all of those things that happened. You know, right after Deshaun decided he wanted to be out of Houston, that all of this started to come forward. And the fact that the lawyer lives right across the street from the owners of the Houston Texans is a little bit suspicious. I mean, there are some things there. But Deshaun's also, you know, there's also stories and there's also documentation that Deshaun's reached out to these women and apologized if he made them feel uncomfortable or unsafe. So, you know, there is something that happened there that even he realized that he did something that was inappropriate at some point. So, you know, again, you know, we're going to move forward. And if he plays really well, a year or two, people will forget about it. And everybody will talk about what an amazing quarterback Deshaun Watson is. But it's a weird situation for Browns fans right now.
It sure is. It sure is. Okay. One word response or quick response. Best move that has been made in the offseason in the NFL.
And right there, I have to think about it. I am going to go. This is going to sound weird, and it's really under the radar. I'm going to go Matt Ryan going to the Indianapolis Colts.
Okay. I'm going Devontae Adams to the Raiders. I think that's the piece that they needed. And with the turmoil that's going on in the AFC West right now, I think the Raiders are apt to rise from the ashes and be very, very productive. Secondary, this is more player-wise. I think the best move, and it's one that I wasn't 100% on board with because I didn't think he'd be successful there, but I'm coming around on it. I think Mitchell Trubisky in Pittsburgh is going to be a lot of fun to watch and will give the Steelers fans a shot in the arm that they haven't had the last couple of years. So I do like to say the Trubisky move would be another one that I would like to see play out well.
Yeah, I think it will. I think it will. I think he's going to do well. I just think Matt Ryan is this stabilizing force that the Colts have needed at quarterback. You know, he's going to be – he's Phillip Rivers more in his prime. Rivers was a little bit too far past. I think Matt Ryan still has enough of his good days ahead of him that he can be that stabilizing force where the Colts are a force in that AFC – what is that, Central Division?
No,
South. It's the South.
Yeah. AFC South, which it's weird because they're Indianapolis is in it. But they've got a couple of receivers. They've got, they got Pittman, T.Y. Hilton, I believe is still there. They've got a good running game as well. So yeah, and the Colts will be a sneaky under the radar pick. All right. Well, we are going to get out of here. We're going to talk NCAA tomorrow. We ran out of time, but plenty to talk about there as we get you prepped for the Sweet 16. A lot of great games going on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Both of our brackets are still kind of alive. I believe you're leading our bracket pool right now, but I still got three of my four Final Four teams left and my championship game, so keeping the fingers crossed on that one.
Yeah, it's crazy. My championship team, Kentucky, lost on Thursday night, and I led our bracket the entire weekend because I've got 98.6% of my bracket right. Like, I've only lost, like, five games.
Hey, you know what? It's all going to change this weekend, buddy. It's all changing. All changing. We'll also talk about Mizzou hiring their new basketball coach out of Cleveland State. That could be a very, very good hire for the Tigers. We'll talk about that tomorrow, as well as everything else going on in the world of sports. We'll keep you updated on the Blues game that'll be going on and anything else that may drop in the NFL because, it's the NFL and they've been dropping news on a daily basis. So before we get out of here, Scott, anything else you got?
No, that's it. Crazy week in sports. This week's going to be fun. Like you said, by the time we come on tomorrow, we'll be about halfway through those first games of the Sweet 16 tomorrow. So we'll have lots of NCAA talk. We'll update you on the Cardinals, have some more blue stuff. And like you said, who knows? We could have eight more moves in the NFL tomorrow. So just stay tuned.
That we could. All right, for Scott Tobin, I'm Wags. Thank you guys for joining us. We'll see you guys tomorrow night here in the Toasted Tavern.
Hey, it's you, man, here from Casey. For all your sports news, catch the Toasted Tavern with Scott Tobin and the man called Wags weeknights at 9 p.m. You can follow Toasted Tavern on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. Let's get toasted.